Welcome to the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. Show notes, links, and contact details can be found at robnunphoto.com. That's www.robnunphoto.com. SCL is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network, and loads of other great tech podcasts can be found over at www.techpodcast.com. Now on with the show. Welcome to SCL, the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. This is show 105 for the 11th of July 2010. Well, my name is Rob from robnunphoto.com, and this is my little podcast all about me trying to become a better photographer and sharing those experiences with everybody else. Now, quick apology in advance. I'm probably going to rush this podcast a little bit. I know I tend to talk fast anyway. The reason for that is Libsyn, who host the podcast for me, I sort of pay them a monthly subscription, and I load up the podcast files to their servers, and then your iPod, your iTunes, or your Zune, or maybe you download it from the web. When you sort of ask for the file, it comes from Libsyn. But recently, like over the last week or so, they've changed the way they do things. And what it means is the way that I traditionally have done the podcast, where I record it and just simply upload it to the servers, update the RSS feed, and that's it, I'm done. I can no longer do it in that really simple manner. I'm a bit annoyed, to be honest, because Libsyn, up to this point, has been a fantastic service, never let us down. And really, really easy to use, reliable, good stats, all this sort of stuff, and it's really good value for money as well. But they seem to have, they've changed everything to make it kind of easy for people who want to use their sort of top-end service for publishing blogs and everything to do podcasts as well. But funnily enough, this has made it more difficult for the people who just want to use FTP to manage their files. So anyway, I'm keen to get a podcast recorded, uploaded, and then so I can play around with the RSS feed to see if you guys are actually getting this hopefully on time. So if you don't get it on time, the normal time you download it, my apologies. If you do, then what I've just talked about is a load of rubbish, and Libsyn are brilliant. But before we go on with today's podcast, or tonight's podcast, depending on when you're going to listen to it, time to talk about our wonderful sponsor, GoToMeeting. So what is GoToMeeting? GoToMeeting is a piece of software that's hosted in the cloud on the internet that enables you to bring together a group of people in a online conference call where you can all talk to each other. But the big difference is you can see, well, they can see your computer. So imagine, you know, if you've ever done a conference call, you're kind of sitting there, you know, you've probably got the paper in front of you and you're reading that and you're listening to what your boss is saying, or if you're doing the conference call, you're sort of reading through your notes, and you know that people aren't always listening. But the beauty with GoToMeeting is the fact that everybody is looking at your screen. All you've got to do is send out an email, you know, come to gotomeeting.com. They put in a meeting ID, and immediately they can then see your screen, so you can go through your PowerPoint presentation. Maybe you can show somebody some new software, show some slides, show all sorts of stuff like that. It's a really great way of not having to physically go somewhere, you know, so you can save your company time and money. But also it's a way of enlivening those traditional sort of over-the-phone conference calls that, if you've ever been in one like I have, well, I've been in lots, they're definitely boring indeed. But the good thing with GoToMeeting is you can try it free for 30 days. All you have to do is visit this URL, which is gotomeeting.com/techpodcasts, with an S on the end. And then you can get GoToMeeting free for 30 days. So that's gotomeeting.com/techpodcast. So give it a go, try it out, and if you like it, become a monthly subscriber. Okay, what I'd like to talk about this week is my month of colour. You may remember about a month ago I committed to shooting in colour for the whole of June, because traditionally I've tended to shoot a lot of black and whites, and I felt that it was time to really try and develop my photography. And one of the ways that I could do that was by forcing myself to say, look, you're only going to shoot in colour. There's a number of reasons for it. I think it was a bit of a reaction to shooting so much black and white, and it was about after the time that I got my black and white film back, the Ilford stuff. And also the fact that, you know, summer is with us, there's all this beautiful summer light around, there's all these fantastic flowers and colours around. And I think that sort of inspired me to say, look, you know, really try out colour, see what I can come up with, see what I can do. Because what I've tended to do in the past, and this is, you know, a bit of a reaction to the environment, you know, when you're in England and we've got a dull overcast day, the light is pretty pants, and one of the ways that you can liven any photograph up if it's taken on an overcast day is to go black and white, and also to go HDR black and white, which I've done quite a few of, where you can bring out all the detail. It makes ordinary dull scenes become a lot more dramatic. So what were my experiences? How did I get on? Well, it all started off, I guess, with revisiting macro photography in the garden with the flowers and the plants that have come out this year, and using my 350D Rebel XT with the Soligor 90-230 with a couple of macro extension tubes on, and just really enjoying getting in close and taking sort of macro and some abstract shots, but really playing around with the light in terms of using the on-camera flash and using a little bit of off-camera flash with my Cobra flash as well. And it really started to turn me on to the fact that if you're in a situation where, you know, you want nice colour, you can't always rely on the sun, because it may be an overcast day or it may be evening time. There might not be enough light around. And so you've really got to fall back on the old, the other tools in your arsenal, which could be sort of reflectors maybe, or flash, or, you know, painting with light when you use a torch to, or some sort of light source to shine on your subject. So that was sort of one part of it. So I'm a lot more open to using flash, and I think one of my next purchases, or a number of my next purchases, will be more flash units, preferably with, or even just an off-camera cord. I need to get somewhere where I can fire a flash a long way, well, not a long way from my camera, but yeah, I don't know, 2 or 3 feet away from my camera, to get that off-camera flash look. I did a photo walk around Portsmouth, and this was quite challenging, not in the photo walk itself, but in the post-processing. Trying to stop myself from opening up Photoshop and Nick Silver X Pro and converting things to black and white, which I normally do, was a real battle. But although most of the photos from that particular scene, you know, weren't anything special, I think the act of not converting any of them to black and white and sticking to my guns about only shooting colour really helped me when I went to Bewley with the family, which is the National Motor Museum down in the New Forest, and I was really looking for colours then. Because it's motor cars are great, aren't they? Especially sports cars. There's loads of vibrant colours, loads of logos, loads of contrasts. And again, in that situation, I was looking for the subjects that were really colourful, really stood out, maybe had some contrasting colours. And that photo sort of experience was a really good one anyway. And I learned a lot in terms of having to shoot inside in limited light and with very limited space, because that meant that even with my 28mm lens on my camera, I couldn't often get far enough back from the cars, because there was only a small walkway that you could go down. And also I was fighting with camera shake, because I was shooting down at sort of 20th, 50th, 10th of a second, so I was having to pump up my ISO to get that shutter speed up to avoid camera shake. But the really tough thing from that shoot wasn't taking the photographs, it was when I got back and I was going through the photographs and post-processing them. And I think over the last month I've become a lot better at post-processing colour photographs from RAW files, and addressing the challenges of some particular colours that always seem to sort of trip me up, or have tripped me up in the past, especially reds. Because I guess when we went to Bewley, there was a lot of sports cars, in one particular a motorbike, which was a Ducati Red. So, you know, I'm pretty sure what Ducati Red looks like. And it was quite challenging getting used to playing around with sliders to make sure I could get that red as close as I could possibly do to the original. And I think I've learned a lot about raw processing using Adobe Camera Raw just by sitting there, you know, with a red subject and tweaking the sliders. I didn't get it right all the time. There's one particular picture where there's one of the Marlborough McLaren F1 cars in it, and what should be the red of the Marlborough livery is actually orange. But you know, I'm picking those things up a lot better these times. So I think that part of the colour challenge for the month of June of working with just colour and post-processing in colour has taught me a lot about that. And I think it also leads on the fact that maybe another thing I want to buy or get hold of next is some sort of colour management tool for my monitor as well, so I can so you can colour, is it like where you put a colour profile into your monitor, so that I can make sure that the colours that I think my monitor's showing, like the reds and the greens and the yellows, are actually what the computer thinks it's showing as well. And there's loads of different ways. I've never really looked into it before, but they're fairly cheap, I think. I think they're sub £100. So yeah, that's another thing we're doing. And obviously then the next step then is to colour profile any sort of printer I get in the future. And I guess it kind of all came together in the last few shots I took near the end of June, which were macro shots again, using the 350D with the Helios 135mm lens. More flowers, more garden shots, and again more red, funnily enough. And there's a particular shot with this red brush plant with a bee in it, which would have been a fantastic shot if I hadn't managed to chop the top of the bee off, but he was moving around quite a lot, so it was quite a challenge. And I thought, you know, the colours are really vibrant without being too oversaturated. And I think the answer to that, you know, if you wonder how do you get colours that well, it's all down to on-camera flash. You know, basically, whenever I'm doing macro shots now and I'm hand-holding, you can guarantee, bang, my on-camera flash is popped up and is blasting away. You know, I normally set the camera to 200th of a second, which is the maximum flash sync speed, and I'm just so that I freeze any potential camera shake or subject shake, and then I'm just sliding my aperture around to sort of control the exposure on these manual focus lenses. And I think that's been probably one of the biggest learning points for me, is, you know, if you really want to control the colour in a particular photograph, especially macro work, then flash is a great way of doing it. If you're in a situation where things are going to be moving and you can't sort of just rely on long exposures, because that flash will bring in contrast, it will bring in a little bit of perspective, because the flash will be coming from particular directions, especially if it's off camera flash, and it just gives your photographs that extra added pop. So there we go. So my month of colour is now over. I think I will be shooting a lot more. Well, not shooting. I always shoot in colour. I will be post-processing a lot more in colour. I really understand. Well, I really think I now understand when I go out and I can see the light. I'm going to think, yeah, that's going to make some nice colourful photographs. Conversely, though, I might well say, well, actually, it's a bit grey today. Maybe it is a time to go go black and white, or go HDR black and white. I've been looking at a lot of HDR photographs recently as well, because I've sort of been thinking about sort of exploring that avenue again of HDR colour photographs. But one thing that's kind of blocking me is the sameness of lots of the colours you see in HDR colour photographs, and especially the greens in the grass. If you went through Flickr and pulled up a load of colour HDRs, you'd probably find that the greens in the grass all look the same. So I think I'm gonna try it out, but I'm gonna try and get it from the sort of more natural perspective, probably, or I might just say sod it, you know, I'm gonna do HDR black and whites. I might even just do normal black and whites, because the most important thing with any of these photographs, the things that makes them better, is the quality of the light. And in the summer or in the autumn, you know, when you've got some nice sunshine with the sun lowish off the horizon, you know you're going to get great light. Or if you're using flash, you know, you're going to get some great light there too. Okay, so I hope I haven't bored everybody too much, and maybe I've inspired people who have shot lots of black and white maybe to try a little bit of colour. because it's a really important facet of photography, I think. And sometimes we can get too carried away and just shooting, well, I know I have got too carried away and shooting black and white all the time, when there's so much more. I don't like to use the term real, well, yeah, it is realism in colour, isn't it? You know, a colour photograph, a good colour photograph, is something very, very special to behold indeed. Okay, thanks. Next, thanks everybody for taking part in the Flickr Photo Forum and putting their photographs in the pool. That's brilliant. Thanks everybody for commenting on the brand new robnownphoto.com. That's been very nice as well. But most of all, I'd like to thank you today for downloading and listening to the podcast. My name's Rob from robnownphoto.com. Remember, you can email me scalespeeder@gmail.com, and hopefully pretty soon I'll be seeing you on Flickr.